This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Alina Gorina from Russia. Alina, it is great talking to you.
Yeah, great talking to you too.
So Alina, you're currently based in Crimea.
Yes. Based in Crimea, Russian transhumanist.
And you were originally from Kazakhstan?
Yes.
What was it like growing up in Kazakhstan?
It was absolutely okay. Eastern Kazakhstan is 70% Russian people, so absolutely okay. Eurasian cyborg.
Right, right. And so, then you moved to Crimea from there?
Yes.
You were telling me you want to give some background information on the history of the Soviet Union.
Yes, Soviet Union, Soviet fantastics. So I'll start. In 1967 year, Soviet scholars put capsules in walls of every city of the Soviet Union, messages to future generations, which was said to open in 2070 year. It's 100 years since the Great October Revolution. There's one of these messages. Dear boys and girls, we are very interested. How do you live? How's your life different from ours? We can only dream about it. We think that your teachers not human and but robots now. You're driving through space roads on fly rockets to other planets. And on the north you have a man-made summer weather, gardens, flowers in bloom, artificial seas. Perhaps somebody of you will be first who will step on our planet, meet a new civilization, and also perhaps in your time there wouldn't be a threat of war and mother's hearts wouldn't tremble anymore. There were many messages like that. Brave assumptions, cosmic communism, space colonization, and world peace. Now those messages seem unrealistic and utopic, isn't it? At the end of the day, our futuristic dominant culture is cyberpunk and post-apocalypse. Cyberpunk is a culture of zero economic growth and monopoly of predatory corporations. From another side, it's a culture of unstrained progress and, in that end, chaotic progress which have expanded like a virus. Obviously, in the 80s, with their neoliberal right-wing economic policy and the first half of 90s, the era of recession, became the era of cyberpunk, and the period from 50s to 70s became the era of space futurism in the US and the Soviet Union. So it would be era intercourse. And in the 1948 year, Soviet had got the pre-war era economic rates after war. Was accepted the Stalin great plan for the transformation of nature. And with the great power of people, Soviet Union could last in 10 years, restore its position in the world economics, and in some areas even become a leader. In 50s, economics continued to develop from 1951 to 1960. GDP of Soviet Union had tripled, and GDP growth was about 10%. In this time, had a place a transition from extensive to intensive economic growth. On the Congress of Communist Party in the 56 years, was accepted a program of forming the unified industrial complex. Realization of a program should help provide the permanent tech progress, fast growth of overall performance rates, development of strategic industries, and as a result, the increase in the standard of living of Soviet people, which should have to bring the Soviet Union to the first place in the world and show basically the advantage of socialist economy over capitalist. Intensive development and permanent stay in the semi-alternative reality of a strained progress and the prompt train, the purpose of which is communism, gave rise to tremendous thoughts, examples of literature, one of which Ivan Efremov books. In the Gobi Desert expedition, Efremov had an idea to create the book about the space future, about the great ring of worlds of the universe, about beautiful, authentic human relations and the planet turned by its inhabitants into the blossoming garden. The novel Andromeda, a space age tale, became such work, published in 1957. The future described in this book, communist, without private property, the market, and professional authorities. Let's see into the inner state of that book. The Earth is surrounded by a permanent chain of city settlements. The plants and power plants are completely automated. Polar regions are warmed with the artificial sun. The major governing body, Council of Economy, the main brain of the planet. He is supplied with information by adversary bodies, academies. Starship Council, the independent body equal to Council of Economy, but concerning space. As the solution of private questions of economy and councils are limited to internal discussion and decision-making, the delegates who have gathered in the council house voted by means of buttons, which have been connected to calculating machine. Decision on global questions are made by universal suffrage. Education level and responsibility of people of Earth, it's rather high in order that each of them could be considered the expert in the provided in general questions of life on the planet. So smart, they can vote, and they're experts in every field in the planet. Movement in the solar system is provided by ionic spaceships, and transport is provided on Earth by high-speed trains, electrobuses, and speedboats. People are helped by cybernetic machine robots. For the help of decision-making, there is a prophetic brain. So, the book of 60-year book is absolutely relevant to what we have in the form of futuristic news today. Barely he saw that we in 2018 would consider all the things just futuristic.
Yeah, that's really remarkable. What is the name of the book and that author?
Andromeda Space Age Tale by Ivan Efremov.
Ivan Efremov.
Yes.
And you said it was written 60 years ago.
Yes. So predicted AI, for a help of decision-making, there is prophetic brain, automatization, hyperloop, high-speed trains, transport on Earth provided by high-speed trains. It may be a hyperloop, ionic spaceships as well.
How did you personally get interested in futurist ideas?
I was also interested in futuristic ideas and in space science and stuff like that from childhood. I want to continue, get into the topic of literature and fantastics of the space futurism era, like I said, from 50s to 70s. I think it's a space futurism era in the literature, science fiction. And similar plot, similar to Ivan Efremov plot in Andromeda, but more eschatological. We can see in the novel The End of a Childhood by Arthur Clarke. When, after the arrival of a super civilization and achievement of an ideal society on Earth, automatization and destruction of discrimination and poverty, everything is wiped in the fact that the last generation of children merges with the highest intelligence while the Earth collapses. A little dystopian at the first sight novel appears in new colors when it comes to the concept of technological singularity. The technological singularity and super-civilization coming from the outside in the form of aliens is a usual plot for Western culture in general and takes a place in the later literature of the Soviet Union, such as the book by Brothers Strugatsky, published in 1967, Disgusting Swans. There are strange people, aliens, as we could call them, are coming to a small city in Eastern Europe, inspiring a fear in adults and gaining a power among children. The philosophy of aliens is simple. The current state of mankind is awful, and if it wouldn't change, it would lead to a catastrophe. After city authorities, represented by intelligence agencies, begin hunting for aliens, aliens are disappearing as suddenly as had appeared. But children remember aliens' message. People are realizing that aliens were people from the future who hope to prevent the catastrophe which waits for us in the future if we don't change. By the way, in a movie was filmed by, in the 90s by the motives of a book, the authorities decide to bomb aliens and children which got the super abilities from aliens left without the mentors lose interest in life. So it's more doomed in the 90s. And in the 50s, in the times of Heinlein, of Clark, Bradbury, Isaac Asimov, in America, the space futurism was ruled by a logic of capitalism and was a result of intensive capitalism, as well as Soviet's fantastic worlds were a result of intensive socialism. So it was intensive economic growth which was created these examples of literature, in my opinion.
So yeah, you have the American cyberpunk writers like Isaac Asimov. I think, was he originally from Russia, but not sure, but he wrote mostly about America, and a lot of these writers were prolific in the, especially the 80s, but the 90s to some degree.
We're not really inspired by modern fantasy nowadays. A modern fantastic attempts to revive the cyberpunk sometimes look decent, especially in games like Observer, for example. Did you heard about Observer, Polish game?
I've heard of it. I haven't played it.
But in modern culture, media space take a place not as much as cyberpunk, but anti-technology, ludite pieces. Or space futurism like Netflix Expanse series looks just pathetic. It's so bad, in my opinion. Ludite anti-statist sentimentalism of Obama's zero economic growth and social tension era with Snowden leaks, or a new space force Trump Odyssey. How should it look more than fantastic, in your opinion?
What are your thoughts on the Soviet retro-futuristic illustrations depicting futuristic cities and space travel, especially the ones from the 1970s?
I think it's great. 1970s, yes. It was a time of this intensive socialism and no doubt that the disintegration of Soviet Union was a failure as well as for the US and for Russia. And now it is noticeable that China takes the place of Soviet Union and becomes the main economic opponent of the USA. China invests billions in Africa. China forms the Economy 5-year plans. China has a plan on AI development and put AI in everything, diplomacy, law enforcement, trade. The USA were pioneers, but and USA is still a technological vanguard of yours in that field, but situation becomes shakier. So Soviet Union, they had an intensive socialism in the form of five-year plans, and five-year plans have helped to get out of poverty to many countries, Japan, South Korea. The plan was used also by Spain in times of Franco. Despite everything, many poor countries use planning. Therefore, it is hard to say that it's more preferable before the laissez-faire economy. But practically nobody in the world uses full laissez-faire economy principles, including the USA.
You would describe your ideology as a techno-corporatism. Can you explain what a techno-corporatism is?
Yes, but I'll start with some kind intercourse into like the core of a problem we have now. Many fantastic, for example, seen with the fact that though there were serious advances in space flights or the equipment, the image of the human itself hasn't changed. In general, all of our activity imprints in our brain. We couldn't not to change during all this time since Industrial Revolution to our times intellectually. The tasks which are carried out by us becoming more and more complicated. The volume of knowledge increases, but with the development of AI, it's not enough. We have to change to compete with the machine, and moreover, to surpass the machine. Reality is, at the moment, most of the people perform mechanical labor, and during the era of robotization, it's not enough. Here we can draw an analogy to the competition between the Soviet Union and the U.S., which moved the U.S. forward. No doubt, to hold people in attention, it is necessary for them not to lose a grasp. Hybrid thinking, boosting training, and, of course, absolutely new educational programs, what is necessary for a new century. Do you remember the oldest Huxley book, A Brave New World? Into utopia from one side, but from another side, the Brave New World has an order and harmony which we seek for, yes?
Oh, yes.
In a book, children from a birth were listening to mantras which should form their identity. It's right because in the first years of life, the brain is extremely susceptible. But instead of mantras, children could receive the whole images and interaction between them directly in their brain. Education should take a place from a birth and become more and more complicated with the human growing up and becoming aware. Education should be in a game form. How many people learn history playing civilization? Of course, the level of games would be much higher and more complicated and focused on an individual. The task is to raise a creative and intellectually developed person. I think this would work better Skinner's didactic principles of programmed education. First, sequence. Second, availability. Third, systematicity, and for independence. Of course, education should be compulsory and free, and with the CRISPR gene editing, this approach would reach a quite equality in society, because equality is needed for meritocracy and technocracy as well.
So you said equality is needed for technocracy?
Yes, for a meritocracy and technocracy, because technocracy is meritocracy. Technocracy is power of the most skilled, the most intellectually developed people, by the way. And
so your basic views on economics is you support free markets as far as competition goes, but you also support free healthcare and education?
Yes. I can explain a little bit about what we have economically and politically. It were merged. And technocracy for everyone is different. In the Soviet Union, technocrats works in the centers of planning at universities. They developed state planning and many other things. In my opinion, Russia could return to it without any problems. Because in Russia, the institutes of democracy haven't developed, yes? And it's not what we can say about countries where institutes of democracy have developed, like Europe or the U.S. And today, people in the U.S. want to solve some problems. And also, they vote for a brand. Despite the fact that other party, other brands can solve this problem as well, people vote for a brand they like, not for solving the problem, yes? There are some assumptions in America that, for example, the Democratic Party would care about climate change, about health care, and so on. But these assumptions can be false, because you voted for a brand, not for solving the problem. That's why you can keep a democracy, but focus on solving the problem. It will be a new way of democracy for sure. It can be called corporatism or syndicalism.
So the problem with democracy is people vote for these brands rather than democracy is flawed, as you're saying, because it doesn't get to the core issue of actually solving the core problems with society. So techno-corporatism is about solving these problems.
For example, the biotech industry has the interest, and there's a huge problem with biotech in the U.S., yes? It's corruption, monopolies. From the 60s, the percent of innovation in biotech pharma industry came to zero. It's not a surprise because in the time, FDA new amendments came into force. It has obliged pharma companies to provide a clinical trial in three phases. In general, this trial can continue for many years. And the cost of one drug production is $5 billion on a medium. For a few decades, FDA had decided is GMO dangerous, gene-modified products. Nanotech, one of many industries on a jurisdiction of FDA. FDA still cannot decide is it a drug or a rabbit or something else. FDA is not effective in general. And AI could solve this problem as well from clinical trials. And FDA, to be said, cannot provide a safety. For example, from 222 FDA-approved drugs between... between like 10 years from 2001 and 2010 year 70 from 222 drugs was claimed as dangerous after production when the drug was already in stores. So AI could solve this problem from clinical trials to fighting monopolies. And corporatism could become a system uniting the small and big workers and bosses in one system, which has its own voice.
So it can both address the issue of creating innovation and competition, but also solving the problem of income inequality in society?
Yes, yes. Because the problem is For example, China, they make a 5-year plans, but it's not a planned economy. It's just a plan for developing the free market economy, because there was approved that planned economy, their plan different from the final final state, from the final product of economy, different in 10 times. And when the market makes a plan, the final state is different from what have been planned in actually 3 times. So free market economy is more effective and rational on the current state of tech. And free market economy can produce more diversity of products than planned economy. And why socialism in one country doesn't work? Because you can't produce the diversity of products which can produce capitalism, free market economy. And that makes problems to you.
So you need the competition for innovation. How do you address the problems with monopolies? Whether it's in the United States, we have these massive tech monopolies, and in Russia under Yeltsin, privatization led to like massive consolidation of wealth among the oligarchs. How do you solve those problems with monopoly?
For example, we take biotech. As I said, for producing one drug, you need around $5 billion of dollars on a medium. So it's some border, some barrier which you cannot. Which small companies cannot come through this border, because it's a crazy number. It's crazy price for producing one drug, $5 billion of dollars. It's one of problems. And second, it's corruption, basically, because monopolies it's a product of corruption. If you can solve a corruption problem, you can solve many of monopoly problem.
And with techno-corporatism and basically automating a lot of government jobs, that can also make free healthcare and free education more accessible.
Yes. Yes, free education, as I said previously, should be compulsory. Yes.
Is there a free healthcare and education in Russia?
Yes, we have a free healthcare and education in Russia, but we can say that that level of this education and healthcare is very high. It's kind of low.
Are you saying there's free healthcare, but the quality is fairly low?
Yes.
So you're in Crimea. Are you under the Russian government or the Ukrainian government?
Russian government, of course.
So is there a higher... I haven't been there, but from what I've heard, the quality of life and the economic prosperity is higher in the Russian-controlled part than the Ukrainian-controlled part. Would you agree with that?
Yes, of course, because Russia in general has a higher level of higher standard of living than Ukraine. And Ukraine, they have a reducing GDP around 25% reducing GDP. So Ukraine is a failed state. It can't be now comparable. Russia was a kind of richer than Ukraine before the 2040 Maidan, Russia was richer than Ukraine, but Ukraine now is very bad, in a very bad state, so it's not comparable.
What was the whole experience like living under the conflict that happened recently?
It's not really living under conflict, because there wasn't any wars, there wasn't any, fights, because there was people overthrow local governments all over Ukraine back in 2014 year, and in Crimea they didn't overthrow government, they didn't fight, there were some demonstrations, but in general there wasn't any violence, and it was really quickly, so we had a referendum, and we was protected by Russian military, and there wasn't any violence, but there was a tension in the air. People united in self-defense guerrillas, and there was check posts on the roads. So there was a tension in the air. People basically, if Russia wasn't made a referendum, there would be maybe Donbass situation, like war situation.
Have you been to Moscow?
Yes, I was in Moscow in childhood.
Do you have any thoughts on the architecture there? There's like a wide variety of architecture, from Tsarist architecture, Stalinist skyscrapers, kind of neo-Gothic, Soviet skyscrapers from the Khrushchev era, and then there's a lot of newer stuff. So you have all these new skyscrapers going up that are really futuristic. You have this place, Novy Arbat, which has all this neon. It just looks... I haven't been there, but just from photographs, it looks very kind of cyberpunk.
You're talking about Moscow City. Moscow City is, I think, it's a really generic skyscrapers, of Asian-type skyscrapers. And it's not I think necessary in Moscow, because what you have in the US, you have city limits, and that's why city becomes more and more they made a skyscraper because they can't expand their city limits. And what we have in Moscow, actually Moscow in a few years, in the latest years, Moscow has many improvements, but these improvements regarding urbanistic stuff like trains, like metro, they more focus on public transportation, because Moscow had a very serious traffic problems. And Soviet Union, for example, they had a focus on public transportation. That's why there wasn't a serious auto industry in the Soviet Union, because Soviet Union focused on public transportation. They understood that public transportation is better and more rational for a city than automobiles, because it causes tremendous traffic problems in all major cities in the world. And of course, Soviet Union has many Stalin time eclectic neoclassic art deco architecture.
Stalinist skyscrapers. You much prefer the neoclassical Stalinist skyscrapers to the newer ones?
Oh, of course. I think most of people prefer these skyscrapers. There was a few buildings like that. One of them is the Moscow Government University, and another, for example, just it was a apartments for a nomenclature for a highest executives in a communist party. If you saw movie Death of Stalin, there was many of that impressive architecture and interior Stalin times impressive architecture and interior in that movie. So it's really pleasant to watch.
So as far as former communist countries go, I've just visited the Czech Republic, and then I was briefly in the former East Germany. A lot of the communist architecture in the Czech Republic, it's fairly bland. But I guess the most interesting thing is some of the radio towers. So in Prague, there's the Žižkov television tower, which is really a space age. And even in Germany, both, well, in West Germany too, but in East Germany, you have these kind of retro-futuristic radio towers. And then in Prague, there's a few. You do have these, a few kind of interesting, kind of brutalist high-rises, but it's not as interesting as the Stalinist skyscrapers. But I do really like the Žižkov Tower in Prague, which is really space age, if you're familiar with that.
Not really.
You've never been to Prague?
No. Even in my city, in Crimea, we have some examples of, say, constructivism. And about the Stalin time architecture, we have a lot of houses, buildings, because you know, the Soviet Union was focused on providing Soviet citizens with free housing. That's why they built basically in every city of Soviet Union. They built houses. And houses during Stalin time, they built like that 2-3 years three floors house with a really really big apartments. And after death of Stalin, when it was a Khrushchev times, they was too inspired with this constructivist ideas, and they built like rational utilistic houses all over Soviet Union. And these houses, for example, did you see image of city Norilsk on the north of Russia? These images of Soviet Union, they're all over the internet, and they say, see, it's so boring. It's basically some boxes.
I know you're really into deco punk and art deco. So, there's a lot of magnificent art deco skyscrapers in New York City, and there's some great smaller ones in California, in LA and San Francisco. A lot of the images you post are not from actual buildings. They're from these kind of these illustrations of how people back in the 20s and 30s envisioned the future. I guess the subgenre is called deco punk. So you have like the film Metropolis. There's some Soviet film Konstantin von Hofmeister showed me, but I forget the name of it, that's kind of deco punk. But you have all these illustrations on Facebook that you showed me, that you posted, and they're really spectacular. But that's something that would be really great to implement.
Yes. I'd remember what that movie is.
I don't know really. I forget the name, but I will add a link in the show notes, so I think Constantine brought it up. Do you think techno-corporatism lead to architectural innovation?
Yes. That's my point, because what we have, most of this aesthetics was created during the times of extensive economic growth and extensive and really great competition between Soviet Union and USA, like Khrushchev times, like 50s, 70s. So it basically is a golden age of space futurism. It's a golden age of science fiction. So yes, like technocracy, for example, technocratic corporatism, it focused on intensive economic growth, and it's absolutely different state of mind, state of mind of people which are living under this government which is produces this intensive economic growth and this intensive technological development all the time, like in the Soviet Union from 50s to 70s, as I said, it was people basically saw that they placed in some prompt high-speed train, like Hyperloop, which is moving directly to the communism.
It's really kind of ironic because during the Cold War, the USA and the Soviet Union were in conflict, but a lot of these space-age illustrations and aesthetics were very similar. So you have the Soviet retrofuturism and Soviet space-age aesthetics. Then the United States in the 50s and 60s, there was all these science fiction films and illustrations of cities with monorails and space-age architecture. So there was, on both the U.S. side and the Soviet Union, there was this really fascination with futurism and space-age aesthetics. And today it seems to be that it's a subculture of futurism, both in, well, there's the technological aspects of futurism, but just on the aesthetic level, you have things, it's a kind of online subculture. But it's not this strong, cohesive movement that it was in both the United States and Soviet Union back then.
Yeah, and I think that now we have some kind of rise of that aesthetics and of that thoughts and fascination. For example, in the U.S., we saw this Mars colonization, and you have a pretty nice economic growth now, like 4% economic growth under the Trump presidency. It's very nice, and what we start to see with Trump presidency, he's saying that we'll invade space force, like way to the stars comes through liberal skulls.
Oh, right. What is the overall attitude towards Trump in Russia and where you live in particular?
In Russia, it kind of changed after Syrian attacks. Most of Russians, they was like Alex Jones, who said, I'm off the Trump train, I'm not with Trump anymore, I don't support Trump. And after that, like Syrian attacks, Russians, they was not optimistic about Trump, and all this Trump hysteria kind of stopped.
Do you think that retrofuturism can be, the aesthetics can be used to create new political movements?
Yes, and what I describe, for example, technocracy, technocratic corporatism, it can be technocratic fascism, technocratic syndicalism, or just 5-year plans of China, or just this cultural state of mind of the whole elite in a particular country, which will lead to some great technologic developments. And these people, these intentions, they can be basically privatized by some political party. For example, I wouldn't say it's realistically, but for example, some party like Republican Party can say, we're now the party of technocrats, or a Democratic Party, whatever. Or just some another party would appear. They not necessarily would be called technocrats or technocrat corporatists or technocrat fascists. They can have the same goals, but the brand doesn't matter at all.
You're very fascinated with transhumanism. What are your thoughts on the prospects of transhumanism, including things like radical life extension, CRISPR gene editing?
Yeah, it's very very close to body things. For example, in the US, because you have now all these technologies, but what you don't have, it's some public opinion on ethical positions of this technology, and also these problems, like I described previously, like FDA, like cost of producing one drug is $5 billion, and this pharma monopolies. So yes, biotech technology is very potentially it has a very big potential, but you need to solve some problems to make it thrive, make it work.
With transhumanism, there's one issue. There's the issue of inequality, whether these technologies will just be available to the ultra rich or they'll be accessible to all people. And then there's also some moral stigma. So I see really transhumanism taking off in China because they don't have any ethical barriers to transhumanism. But the situation in the United States is, on the conservative side, they're kind of opposed to it from a standpoint of Christian morality, that a man is playing the role of God. And then a lot of liberals would oppose it on the grounds that transhumanism is a form of eugenics. So there are these moral barriers in the United States. I'm not sure if that would be the same case in Russia.
There's some barriers between these two kind of radical groups in the U.S. And what I can say about Russia, they inherited this, for example, FDI system of approving one drug. The cost of producing one drug in Russia is also very high, and Russia is very dependent on imports drugs, for example. And Russian biotech industry is not developed as well as many other Russian industries. Russia, we have 70% of economy in the hands of government. So we don't have really free market. So it should be a question of government or a question of their will to make it happen. By the way, yes, there's also ethical problems, but you know, I think government, they would want radical lifespan extension because they more like their old voters, you know, like Trump likes boomers. For example, Putin likes old people because old people vote for Putin and young people not voting for Putin. So maybe government would be interested in expanding lifespan of their voters, and this is not really moral or good intention. Could make something good for all of us, I think.
What type of political outlook do younger people in Russia generally have?
They have, let's say, leftist, liberal views in general, but there's also many people who have very extreme nationalist views or monarchist views, but most of young people in Russia, they're non-political. They don't see any purpose for being political because we don't have politics in Russia, people say. We have one ruling party, one president who's deciding everything. So it's not, there's no pluralism and fights and struggle between some political parties because we have only one party.
So there's more cohesion because in America, basically you have the Trump supporters and you have the left wing people, and they absolutely totally despise each other. It's not like that in Russia to the same degree.
No. Most of Russian people, they have some basic common ground. For example, fighting corruption, making economy great, and making all these issues about economy, about the corruption, about education or healthcare. Most of Russian people, they have common ground in it, but the U.S. They have already this overcapitalized and developed economy. That's why there's no really I think struggles about economy, struggles about corruption. I think the U.S. they have many struggles which are cannot be performed in Russia because Russia simply don't have these problems. These problems are simply stupid.
On what political issues do you agree more with the left wing?
Left wing, you mean in America?
I guess both left wing issues on either social or economic issues.
If you talk about left-wing in America, I'm basically agree, I think, on everything. For example, healthcare and education. I agree on that. By the way, leftists, they don't have any great solutions for economy. they really focused on this welfare for everybody, or in general, it seems like that they were concerned about this welfare for everybody, or making universal basic income for everybody, but they not concerned on things I like, things I value about tech and technocracy and transhumanism and exploration of space. Latest, they not focused on this at all. They more, I think, as their party too much occupied by environmentalists, and all they think about is some environmentalism, and they absolutely ignoring any other issues regarding science and tech.
Yeah, so, well, technological innovation can solve environmental issues because the more you invest in technology, you come up with alternative sources of energy. And I don't think the United States, I can't really comment as much on Russia, but I'm sure Russia has the same issues. But the more you invest in technology, the more you solve environmental problems.
Yeah, yeah, of course, of course it is, but as you said previously, they have many, for example, issues about eugenics, like they can see that CRISPR is eugenics. By the way, in the end of the day, I think leftists are more open to what I would want to see in the world than right-wingers, because I think right-wingers have more some tensions against technocracy at all. Yeah, leftists, they have problems, but I think they in general more open, but they kind of stuck in this hopelessness and some SGW stuff. So if they could rebrand their the whole movement and make it more futuristic, I think I would be, and many people even in the right wing, on the alt-right, they would be totally for left in the America.
Oh, you mentioned the alt-right. Are you familiar with the whole scene on Facebook called the alt-left?
I'm not really familiar with alt-left. I know only about this chat called alt-left.
Oh, right. I guess someone just added you to that. So you're more...
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts on the American alt-right?
Alt-right is basically dead. I think it's absolutely dead movement, and many would agree, but I'm talking about people who was familiar with alt-right before, this right-wing people, like people for Trump, MAGA bots, these guys, I think they would be totally for left if the left would perform some value of some purpose in it, but they stuck in some 60s, they stuck in some LARPing about genders and stuff, and it's it scares away many people.
And yeah, I think with creating new movements is if you address like different economic concerns, so if you have economic competition that leads to innovation, but you also have free healthcare and education, and we solve this problem with like say massive student loan debt, which is a big concern for the left, and Bernie Sanders movements, I think if you connect those issues together, you can bring together people on the left and the right, and then people will move over, they kind of get over a lot of the petty stuff and focused on more important things like advancing civilization.
Yes, of course. And, you know, we're in Russia, for example, regarding education. What we have in Russia, it's some 19th century education. People write like handwriting in on a paper, some useless shit. And we even have some religious classes. So when I was in school, there wasn't religious classes because I was in school in Ukraine, and I finished the school exactly in 2040 year. But in Russia, I heard there's some classes about religious education, about Orthodox Christianity. And most of people, they absolutely hate it. They think it's some propaganda. So we have some 19th century useless education here. But we have now so many technological tools to create a new type of education. As I said, in a form of games, it can be absolutely education from the very young age, but we're not focused on it.
Alina Gorina, it has been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.